Well, ladies and gentlemen, here we are. It's Thursday afternoon, and so good news. That means it's time for In the Garden, a call-in program where you can have a conversation about what's going on in your garden, best practices, what to do, maybe what not to do. And we connect with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski from up north in Juneau, Haines area sometimes. So, but before we dive in, we want to say thank you to the Flower Farm. They help underwrite this program. And, of course, their main operation is out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, every day except Wednesday, 10 to 5. They still have lots of bedding plants and gift certificates for subscriptions to locally grown dahlias and flowers. And they have the Garden Center, which is in town, right across the street from the library on Haugen Drive, with lots of great goodies there. So thank you to them for helping support this program. And with no further ado, let's see if we can get Ed Bajarski on the line. I think we might have a connection here. Coming in loud and clear, I hope, Ed?
Yes, yeah, I hear you clearly. I'm hanging out here in a shady spot near the Haines Cemetery.
Okay.
I've never been here before, actually, but there was shade, so it's a little hot up here. 68 degrees, and it's beautiful.
Nice. Well, that's pretty darn decent weather for planting and spending a lot of time in the garden, as long as you wear a wide-brimmed hat.
And have enough water. Make sure you stay hydrated and keep the plants hydrated, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we do have a little bit of rain in the forecast around these parts, but maybe the winds will blow us some of your clear skies.
Yeah, up at this end of southeast Alaska, they need rain. It is dry. I mean, is dry, has been dry. The rivers are low, surprisingly low, you know, for this time of year. There isn't much snow up the mountains, which is kind of all over southeast Alaska, unfortunately. But, you know, like I said, if you got water, it can garden.
Yes, yes. And, you know, we got to stay adaptable, I suppose. But we do need rain. Yeah, no doubt. Well, so what do you got going on this time of year here? Beautiful sunny weather,
things are warming up in the greenhouses and outdoors. Mm-hmm. I've got lots of stuff waiting for me. I have corn sprouting, I hope, at home in Juneau that I hope to put in. I'll be home tomorrow afternoon, working all through the weekend back to Haines, but I'm hoping to get my corn planted. It may be a dream, but what the heck, I'll give it a try, and it's going to be under clear plastic and trying to stay warm. We'll hope for heat later this summer. And then I've also took my tomato plants out of the house, put them in the greenhouse, put some horticultural fabric over them to harden them off, and they too are going to try to go into the ground this weekend if things go well. And then following that, all the training and pruning and fertilizing and fondling of the tomato plants to follow.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe that's something, you know, that definitely when temps start warming up, I started thinking about people's journeys into the world of growing tomatoes. It takes a lot of work.
It does. I mean, I was just talking with a friend visiting up here from Texas, and he said, You have to grow tomatoes indoors, huh? And you talk about watermelons. I just shook my head when you mentioned the watermelon.
I forgot those even exist.
We have to improve the odds.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in Haines, the sunnier locations, and they get more heat in the summertime, they can do tomatoes, zucchinis quite well outdoors. And I haven't seen any cucumbers growing outdoors up here.
No.
But so there's better options. So, but for us in the greenhouse, whether that be in pots and tubs, I've got big kind of raised boxes in my my big greenhouse. That's boxes there are 3.5 feet long by or wide, a foot deep, and 30 feet long. So that way I can. I've got a little more water security, or I can go away for a few days without having to worry so much about keeping them watered, just because they've got that bigger reservoir the roots will spread out into them. So
right.
Initially, you know, we've hopefully everybody's got them started or whatever, and maybe have gotten them planted with some of mine. I'm sure with their size, they're going to have to be kind of, I'll be planting them at an angle just because they're a foot tall or so. And tomato plants, luckily, don't mind, in fact, benefit by being planted deeper. Or in my case, I'm going to kind of lean them. They're going to be at an angle in a trench so that the roots are not that deep, so it's still in the warm soil, but they're going to be partially the stems up to the top 3-4 inches maybe will be buried after I snip off the leaves along those stems, because otherwise they would rot because of being covered by the soil.
Hmm. Okay, so that's a really interesting technique that I haven't considered before. So when you're planting or transplanting tomatoes from where you've started them indoor, if they've gotten maybe kind of tall or maybe leggy or whatever,
right,
then you can lay them in at an angle and snip the leaves off the part that you bury, and then it'll just kind of re-straighten itself up and be happy?
Yes. Well, I'm going to help them straighten up with because I'll have either strings or tomato cages to train them to, so they do go up, because they otherwise, again, and there, here's where it kind of gets a little more complicated. Which kind of tomatoes are you growing? Whether you're growing determinate tomatoes, which will only get to a certain size. They'll only get up, most of the determinate varieties, some of them are really short, only get a foot tall or so. You can grow those in little 1 gallon pots. Some will get to be 2 to 3 feet tall, and you can grow those in pots or hanging baskets. And so that can work quite nicely, because getting them up off the ground, off the, you know, out of the bottom, the hanging baskets are probably going to be in the warmer location in your greenhouse. Mm-hmm. So that helps. As long as they aren't, you may or may not want to use black plastic pots, depending on how hot, because they can potentially overheat if you don't have your greenhouse well ventilated. But that's a good way to go. And with those determinate plants in a hanging basket, you may want to actually pinch out the growing tip so that you get side shoots. So then you have kind of a bush, basically, in there. A multi-stem bush to produce, hopefully, flowers and then tomatoes.
That's interesting.
Where if you're growing indeterminate tomatoes, those have the potential to grow, many of them do, have the potential to grow and grow and grow and grow if we had a long enough season and enough daylight and warmth, potentially to 10 to 20 feet tall. You know, those are the more common greenhouse growing tomatoes, and in a commercial operation, they'll actually train them, tie them, or clip them to a string or some twine on a reel, which can, as these tomatoes grow up and they clip them up higher onto the string and then higher as they grow, the lower leaves and potentially fruiting spurs that give fruit as they finish, they actually let the reel of twine or string down and kind of coil the tomato stems, like a vine, at the bottom, you know, down on the ground or on the soil or wherever, whatever they're growing on. So, you know, you kind of have to choose which kind of tomato you're going to grow. Well, certainly for early ripening around Southeast Alaska, at least, but also how tall is your greenhouse or whatever hoop house that you're growing them in, to think about how much room can you allow them?
Mm-hmm. So training and pruning sounds like a pretty important part of plotting the course of these plants as the season goes.
It is, you know, and for the indeterminate ones that keep growing and growing, where we talked about pinching the tip off the determinate ones to get more side branches, on the indeterminate ones, we do not want that to happen. We want to normally just train them to a single stem or at most two that grow up, and then you take off the little side shoots that can form right in the axils of leaves, so you don't get 10 shoots, because again, that takes energy and takes away from the tomatoes that we want to grow. So you train them to one or two stems and keep them supported. And then I suppose that leads to our talk about ventilation and making sure that we've got them spaced out, because planting these little tomatoes that I'll be planting this weekend, well, shucks, I could put them, you know, they're small. I could put them a foot apart, you know, and because they don't take up much room yet. But later in the summer, they will. And so I've got to resist that temptation and plant them at the wider spacing that they need, which is likely to be 18 inches to 2 feet in the greenhouse, knowing that with the tomato cages or just the spread of the leaves, they will take up a lot more room.
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about folks out there in the community who maybe were either bought or were given like a tomato start, and they might not know ahead of time, is this a determinant or indeterminant tomato variety? Like, what are some of the main varieties of each of those two categories?
Just, okay, we'll throw out a few that I like. I mean, I've tried dozens at least, and I'm always trying to get some a variety that'll grow larger tomatoes, but really good ones that consistently bear fruit. And I'm looking usually in the seed catalogs or whatever that will say start to bear fruit, say in hopefully 60 days or 65 days maximum, kind of. I mean, they'll grow longer and longer, but so then for the determinate varieties, there are some of them are called subarctic, and there's subarctic plenty and beauty and others. There's tumbler is a good one. 4th of July, if I start them early enough, I can actually have tomatoes the 4th of July, but that means starting them probably the, you know, beginning of maybe early February, March to get that to that stage. Siberian, stupis. And there's some Russian varieties too, although there's also Russian varieties that are indeterminate and go on from there. But most of these are cherry tomato to salad size tomatoes.
Gotcha.
Oregon Spring will give a little bigger tomato, and they're determinate. Some of these, and again, depend. Red Robin is a tiny one, has small cherry tomatoes. That's one that maxes out at maybe 10 to 12 inches tall in a pot. Mm-hmm. So you grow that in a pot on your windowsill or in your office or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the determinate ones, the ones where we're pinching off the tip and wanting them to kind of bush out, those are mostly cherry tomato varieties of some of the specific sorts you've just
mentioned. Right, yes. I would say more cherry than not, although some of them, some of the paste tomatoes, I've got, let's see, I'm trying to remember the name of it, Beaver Lodge Plum is an early season variety that is, and there's a Beaver Lodge series of, there's three or four different kinds. There's a cherry, there's a plum tomato, it's a paste type tomato, which grows well for me. I've even dried them successfully indoors. And so those are pretty good. But if you often, and I know a lot of folks start looking at, well, I want to grow heirloom tomatoes because they often, you know, they're advertised as having great flavor, which they often do. Mm-hmm. Usually most of those are long season tomatoes that I can't manage to ripen in my greenhouse.
Gotcha.
But then some of the indeterminate ones that will grow taller. Early Girl is a common one, which is, and that will give you a decent salad-sized tomato. I'm not impressed with the flavor and the tough skin of them, but they will grow and ripen. So, hey, that's a point in their favor.
Yeah.
favorites, certainly, Sun Gold is a cherry tomato that will grow and grow and grow tremendously. It is an orangey tomato. I mean, just falls off the stem into your hand when it's ripe, and it tastes. It is really, certainly my favorite. My wife and I are favorites.
Yeah.
That's a good one, and it's early to bear, and it keeps bearing nice fruit. You probably heard of Sweet 100 or Sweet Million. Again, cherry tomatoes. I can't really recommend from my own good experience any other larger size tomatoes in the indeterminate. So, I mean, experiment. Mm-hmm. Certainly, well, probably next year, since it's, you know, be a little late to start a tomato from seed at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But do some experimentation. You know, when you look at the catalogs and look at early varieties, they certainly advertise them all as being the best and the most wonderful and easy to grow and the tastiest and you name it all. You know, there's you can't necessarily believe everything you read in seed catalogs, okay?
Right, like, we forget the superlatives, but pay attention to the details about, like, estimate.
Right,
times.
Grow for yourself, really. And again, what grows for you may not even, or grows and tastes good to you may not, to your neighbor just across the street who has different conditions. Soil matters, fertility matters, you know, the nutrients that you feed your tomatoes definitely matter also. So, but still, you know, greenhouse tomatoes sometimes get a bad rap, the ones that we get from down south, because those are bred for toughness, not necessarily for flavor.
Well, maybe that's a good point to touch on briefly, is since we got everybody thinking about tomatoes, what are a couple of key things to be keeping in mind as we're beginning to launch into growing tomatoes as far as nutrients go?
Okay, so here we want to be careful. So comparing, say, tomatoes to lettuce. That's a, you know, hopefully you're growing both so you have nice salads. Well, the lettuce would want higher nitrogen fertilizer, generally. Then the tomatoes are going to need a more balanced, usually a balanced fertilizer, a bit more phosphorus and potassium, particularly for strong stems and for fruit, flower, and fruit production. You know, or lettuce, you don't want to grow flowers and fruit.
Right.
So again, the nitrogen is, so you have a high first number. So, I mean, of some of the fertilizers that I use, I have an 8-2-4 fertilizer that will tend to get used for something like lettuce. I mean, if you can get away with it, you can bury fish underneath it as an extra nitrogen source. Where with the tomatoes, I use a 4-4-4 blend and may even supplement it with a little bit of extra fish bone meal, in there to give that extra phosphorus, for those. And we don't have to worry pH, soil acidity, as long as you're in the 6-7 range or something like that, you should be in fairly good shape. If you want to use a little bit of wood ashes in the beds or mixed into the soil, would be fine. Again, that helps give you more potassium and gives you more calcium and helps sweeten the soil slightly. So again, that getting the more balanced fertilizer for the tomatoes, you may very well see fertilizer specifically advertised for tomatoes or something like that, which may work also. But again, read the package and don't over-fertilize. Better to use a small quantity. Again, if you're mixing soil, say, to go into pots or mixing it into your beds where you're going to be growing in the greenhouse or big boxes or something like that, sometimes you're better off mixing in half as much as they recommend to start with, and then add a little bit more later on. Or if you're using a liquid fertilizer also, again, try to find a balanced liquid fertilizer rather than something like, say, the Alaska fish, the liquid fish fertilizer. I'm sure you've seen it in, you know, half gallon or gallon jugs. If you use a lot of that on your tomatoes, you'll get a tomato plant that grows great, has great big green leaves, and doesn't flower very much.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and you could actually use that kind of there's another one that's not related, but that kind of applies to strawberries, same reason that people make a big rich strawberry bed, rich fertilizer, compost, whatever. Plant strawberries in it, and all they get is great big leaves that you should throw in your salads, but they don't flower. You know, they're used to growing in poor soil, in sandy soil. So, you know, you could use a little bit of tomato food probably on strawberries, but even less than, you know, not very much.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. You know, and probably some of us are used to, with our stuff outside, with a lot of the nutrients leaching out in a heavy rain type season, that's not really going on inside the greenhouse, so even more risk for fertilization habits that might get a little out of balance. But yeah, so less is more.
Very much so. You know, that's a really good point, Oren, that you can have fertilizer buildup and salts build up to the point inside a greenhouse, as you say, you don't get the rain leaching it. It's actually worth leaching, like at the end of the season, you know, watering stuff through, that is particular if you're using chemical fertilizers compared to organics. But even with those, you've got to be careful that you don't have a salt buildup. You get the white crusty stuff that you might see on or in pots or on the outside of pots, on clay pots at least.
Totally.
So you've got to be very careful not to be over-fertilizing in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good stuff to be thinking about. And, I don't think we've ever mentioned that point on the show, because that's really, like, ringing in my head right now. Just like, okay.
And that's something, and that's something, actually, if you're having soil tests done, that's one of the items you can ask for, is the dissolved salts, or sometimes it's CEC, cation exchange capacity. Some of the things they can look for, and they might, you know, you might get numbers back from them which indicate that you have a very high salt content in your soil and that you need to do something about it. Or, you know, and it may even be moving that, taking the soil out from the greenhouse, putting it outside, and then mix up some new soil to bring into your greenhouse, or new, whether you're using potting soil, mixed with, you got to have it, keep it loose, so mixed with some other soil too, for inside, and then that way the Mother Nature leaches the soil for you outdoors.
Yeah, that's makes sense.
That's hard work. I mean, well, unless you're growing in pots, is easy. You got big beds, then it's a matter of, can you get a wheelbarrow in there, shovel into the wheelbarrow and haul it out, or what are you going to do? Or even partially replace soil, I guess, would also work.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right, I suppose so. Replace some, give it a good mix. Lots of good exercise.
Sure.
Good fitness program. Well, those are great ideas, and good things to think about, especially around, the balanced fertilizer, not over-fertilizing, keeping a good idea of what you've really got growing, and Maybe while we're thinking about it, maybe we should touch on what are a couple of recommended practices as far as pruning, spacing, ventilation, those kind of things, as far as once things start really growing in those tomato beds.
Sure. So, yeah, the spacing I mentioned, 18 inches to 2 feet apart, and that really applies even if you're growing in pots also, you know, and that's, at least with pots, you can move them apart. If you need to, you know, you can squeeze a bunch of them in there if you've got space, or maybe give some away if necessary. But give them the space, and maybe you'll have to space them wider and wider as they grow larger. So, but that's a challenge too, depending if you've got strings that are hanging down from the crossbars versus having individual tomato cages to support those, or that applies to cucumbers that you may be growing in there also. So spacing, removing any dead and dying leaves off the bottom so that they don't get started getting moldy and mildewy in there, which is not a good thing. Ventilation is critical for our greenhouses. I'm sure mine is cooking away. Luckily the doors are open, and I guess the tomatoes are getting used to it, I hope. But getting that ventilation so you're not, if you've got a maximum minimum thermometer, or if you've got, better yet, having a thermostatically controlled fans that come on at maybe at 80 degrees to exhaust some of that hot air and bring in some cool air from low vents that you have made in your greenhouse. That's really important. So, and again, don't close up your greenhouse too tight, even if we have cool and damp conditions, because that can cause a buildup, again, of moisture inside, which can make the conditions better for molds and mildews to grow inside the greenhouse. So you want to be careful there to get a balancing act. Got to have some air movement. You may have an oscillating fan or two inside the greenhouse just to move air around inside there, so your leaves don't build up a lot of moisture on them. Again, that's the perfect conditions for fungus to grow on
absolutely.
A moist surface.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the most important parts of having ventilation in the greenhouse. Just keep things just kind of jostling a little bit for all the reasons, you know, kind of strengthen up the stems, fertilize a little bit, or pollinate, but above all, just keep the moisture down on the leaves.
for fungus.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Well, I think that's a good set of considerations for people who are moving their tomatoes into the greenhouse roundabout
and,
now.
And cucumbers, too. Yeah, well,
oh,
that's
yeah.
true. Right, I did start same thing. Hopefully my cucumbers are up and my squash are up. All of these that I left behind, started, and then I leave. So hopefully they're up and growing, and they're going to get moved in. Cucumbers are a little, then squash are a little different. They usually do not want to be buried very deep. You know, just do a little contrast here. Just up to their first, that big seed leaf, big oval leaf that comes out even before the true leaves do. And you don't want to have, unlike tomatoes, which can be pot nut bound for a while, you know, you get a mass of roots tight in that tomato pot, you can loosen that up and you don't have to be that gentle about it. With cucumbers and squash, you want to be very careful not to get them pot bound. You know, get them up to maybe two true leaves or three at most before transplanting, ever so gently. You know, sneak them out of the pot and into the nice, moist, hopefully warm soil, and water them in gently, maybe with a little bit of a light nutrient solution that you might use in for your tomatoes too, since they too are going to be flowering and fruiting for you, even, you know, they don't quite ripen the same. But yeah, definitely they are more touchy, they're more sensitive to molds and mildews, and they're more sensitive to temperature, too cold of temperatures also. So again, they're quite the difference there between the cucumbers and the tomatoes in your greenhouse.
That's good to be conscious of those distinctions, because we're certainly growing them side by side in a lot of different places.
And they also have, I mean, you know, for both of those, cucumbers and squash too, also tend to have, at least with zucchinis, most of them are a bush type squash. But I mean, they can make a bush that's 4 feet across. Where with cucumbers, there are some that are kind of bushy or don't get too tall or lengthy. But again, if you can train them up on wires, strings, even tomato trellises, they like that support, and then the cucumbers hang down underneath. So they are easier to find and to harvest. So just think about the differences there when you're planting. Again, giving them space, knowing that, and that cucumbers too can be pruned the same way as those determinate tomatoes, so you don't have that many stems. Again, just prune them to one or two stems as they're going up the strings or up the trellises.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Kind of help shape the way they fill your space.
Yes, exactly right. Use the if you've got a tall greenhouse, you know, use that height in the greenhouse to grow stuff up into it. And I mean, you can get more. That's assuming you may be picking tomatoes or cucumbers from a ladder if you're lucky enough to do that, but they grow that big, but that can work too.
Yeah. Well, okay, I think that is a great set of things for people to consider. There's always more we can get into, but let's I guess we'll save it for next week, and we'll let folks pull back onto the roadways, because I assume once we get going, everybody just pulls over, turns the radio up, pulls out the notepad, you know.
Right. Sounds good. And I'll be in Haines again next week. So
okay.
We'll see. Maybe I have to give a Haines garden report.
Yeah. Well, it's always
here.
It is always really interesting to kind of keep an eye on that process, because of course, so many of us do have to. This time of year and in the summer and fishing and everything else, you know, get our gardens started, set them up to succeed, and then leave them for a little while and cross our fingers and hope we're, you know, okay. So it's always interesting to think about that that little fact of life around these parts. So we'll we're always open to hearing your updates when you return to somewhere.
Okay. All right, till next week, Orin.
Okay, thanks so much till then, and thanks so much.
All right, bye.
Bye. Well, that was In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski. Every Thursday afternoon, we are very lucky to get Master Gardener Ed on the phone. Lots of great knowledge to draw from as we set about the laborious art of growing plants in the temperate rainforest. And speaking of growing plants, the Flower Farm is one of the specific underwriters of this program, and they can help you grow plants. They've got a garden center right in town across from the library on Haugen Drive, open every day except Sunday, 10 to 5. And, of course, the flower farm itself is out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, 10 to 5 every day but Wednesday. And they've got trees and bedding plants and black gold potting soil, compost, lots of goodies. And gift certificates for bouquet subscriptions. Mm-hmm. Those dahlias are beginning to bloom. Well, that has been In the Garden. Thank you so much for listening. Always feel free to shoot me an email with topics or questions that you want us to explore. And it's great to take advantage of this resource, gardening knowledge resource that we have in Ed Bajarski. So don't be shy. Shoot us an email through our website or call the station any old time you want. Up next, we have High Country Music hosted by Alec McMurrin.
This country needs homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see.